13. Consider the past. How many, both high and low, have at all times yearningly awaited the advent of the manifestations of God in the sanctified persons of his chosen ones? How often have they expected his coming? How frequently have they prayed that the breeze of divine mercy might blow and the promised beauty step forth from behind the veil of concealment and be made manifest to all the world? And whensoever the portals of grace did open, and the clouds of divine bounty did rain upon mankind, and the light of the unseen did shine above the horizon of celestial might, they all denied him and turned away from his face, the face of God himself. Reflect, what could have been the motive for such deeds? What could have prompted such behavior towards the revealers of the beauty of the all-glorious? Whatever in days gone by hath been the cause of the denial and opposition of those people hath now led to the perversity of the people of this age. To maintain that the testimony of providence was incomplete, that it hath therefore been the cause of the denial of the people, is but open blasphemy. How far from the grace of the All-Bountiful and from his loving providence and tender mercies it is to single out a soul from amongst all men for the guidance of his creatures, and on the one hand, to withhold from him the full measure of his divine testimony, and on the other, inflict severe retribution on his people for having turned away from his chosen one. Nay, the manifold bounties of the Lord of all beings have at all times, through the manifestations of his divine essence, encompassed the earth and all that dwell therein. Not for a moment hath his grace been withheld, nor have the showers of his loving kindness ceased to rain upon mankind. Consequently, such behaviour can be attributed to naught save the petty-mindedness of such souls as tread the valley of arrogance and pride, are lost in the wilds of remoteness, walk in the ways of their idle fancy, and follow the dictates of the leaders of their faith. Their chief concern is mere opposition. Their sole desire is to ignore the truth. Unto every discerning observer, it is evident and manifest that had these people in the days of each of the manifestations of the Son of Truth sanctified their eyes, their ears, and their hearts from whatever they had seen, heard, and felt, they surely would not have been deprived of beholding the beauty of God, nor strayed far from the habitations of glory. But having weighed the testimony of God by the standard of their own knowledge, gleaned from the teachings of the leaders of their faith, and found it at variance with their limited understanding, they arose to perpetrate such unseemly acts. Consider Moses. Armed with the rod of celestial dominion, adorned with the white hand of divine knowledge, and proceeding from the Paran of the love of God, and wielding the serpent of power and everlasting majesty, he shone forth from the Sinai of light upon the world. He summoned all the peoples and kindreds of the earth to the kingdom of eternity, and invited them to partake of the fruit of the tree of faithfulness. Surely you are aware of the fierce opposition of Pharaoh and his people, and of the stones of idle fancy which the hands of infidels cast upon that blessed tree. so much so that Pharaoh and his people finally arose and exerted their utmost endeavor to extinguish with the waters of falsehood and denial the fire of that sacred tree, oblivious of the truth that no earthly water can quench the flames of divine wisdom, nor mortal blasts extinguish the lamp of everlasting dominion. Nay, rather, such water cannot but intensify the burning of the flame, and such blasts cannot but ensure the preservation of the lamp, were ye to observe with the eye of discernment, and walk in the ways of God's holy will and pleasure. And when the days of Moses were ended, and the light of Jesus, shining forth from the dayspring of the Spirit, encompassed the world, all the people of Israel arose in protest against him. They clamoured that he whose advent the Bible hath foretold must needs promulgate and fulfil the laws of Moses, whereas this youthful Nazarene, who laid claim to the station of the divine Messiah, had annulled the laws of divorce and of the Sabbath day, the most weighty of all the laws of Moses. Moreover, what of the signs of the manifestation yet to come? These people of Israel are even unto the present day still expecting that manifestation which the Bible hath foretold. How many manifestations of holiness, how many revealers of the light everlasting have appeared since the time of Moses, and yet Israel, wrapped in the densest veils of satanic fancy and false imaginings, is still expectant that the idol of her own handiwork will appear with such signs as she herself hath conceived. Thus hath God laid hold of them for their sins, hath extinguished in them the spirit of faith, and tormented them with the flames of the nethermost fire. And this for no other reason, except that Israel refused to apprehend the meaning of such words as have been revealed in the Bible concerning the signs of the coming revelation. As she never grasped their true significance, and to outward seeming such events never came to pass, she therefore remained deprived of recognizing the beauty of Jesus and of beholding the face of God, and they still await his coming. From time immemorial, even unto this day, all the kindreds and peoples of the earth have clung to such fanciful and unseemly thoughts, and thus have deprived themselves of the clear waters streaming from the springs of purity and holiness. To them that are endowed with understanding, it is clear and manifest that when the fire of the love of Jesus consumed the veils of Jewish limitations, and his authority was made apparent and partially enforced, he, the revealer of the unseen beauty, addressing one day his disciples, referred unto his passing, and kindling in their hearts the fire of bereavement, said unto them, I go away, and come again unto you. And in another place he said, I go, and another will come, who will tell you all that I have not told you, and will fulfill all that I have said. Both these sayings have but one meaning, were ye to ponder upon the manifestations of the unity of God with divine insight. Every discerning observer will recognize that in the dispensation of the Quran, both the book and the cause of Jesus were confirmed. As to the matter of names, Muhammad himself declared, I am Jesus. He recognized the truth of the signs, prophecies, and words of Jesus, and testified that they were all of God. In this sense, neither the person of Jesus nor his writings hath differed from that of Muhammad and of his holy book, inasmuch as both have championed the cause of God, uttered his praise, and revealed his commandments. Thus it is that Jesus himself declared, "I go away and come again unto you." Consider the sun. Were it to say now, "I am the sun of yesterday," it would speak the truth. And should it, bearing the sequence of time in mind, claim to be other than that sun, it still would speak the truth. In like manner, if it be said that all the days are but one and the same, it is correct and true. And if it be said, with respect to their particular names and designations, that they differ, that again is true. For though they are the same, yet one doth recognize in each a separate designation, a specific attribute, a particular character. Conceive accordingly the distinction, variation, and unity characteristic of the various manifestations of holiness, that thou mayst comprehend the allusions made by the Creator of all names and attributes to the mysteries of distinction and unity, and discover the answer to thy question as to why that everlasting beauty should have at sundry times called himself by different names and titles. When the unseen, the eternal, the divine essence caused the day star of Muhammad to rise above the horizon of knowledge, among the cavils which the Jewish divines raised against him was that after Moses, no prophet should be sent of God. Yea, mention hath been made in the scriptures of a soul who must needs be made manifest, and who will advance the faith and promote the interests of the people of Moses, so that the law of the Mosaic dispensation may encompass the whole earth. Thus hath the King of eternal glory referred in his book to the words uttered by those wanderers in the veil of remoteness and error. "The hand of God," say the Jews, "is chained up. Chained up be their own hands, and for that which they have said, they were accursed. Nay, outstretched are both his hands. The hand of God is above their hands." Although the commentators of the Qur'an have related in diverse manners the circumstances attending the revelation of this verse, yet thou shouldst endeavour to apprehend the purpose thereof. He saith, "How false is that which the Jews have imagined? How can the hand of him who is the King in truth, who caused the countenance of Moses to be made manifest and conferred upon him the robe of prophethood, how can the hand of such a one be chained and fettered? How can he be conceived as powerless to raise up yet another messenger after Moses? Behold the absurdity of their saying, how far it hath strayed from the path of knowledge and understanding." Observe how, in this day also, all these people have occupied themselves with such foolish absurdities. For over 1,000 years they have been reciting this verse and unwittingly pronouncing their censure against the Jews, utterly unaware that they themselves openly and privily are voicing the sentiments and belief of the Jewish people. Thou art surely aware of their idle contention that all revelation is ended, that the portals of divine mercy are closed, that from the day springs of eternal holiness no sun shall rise again, that the ocean of everlasting bounty is forever stilled, and that out of the tabernacle of ancient glory the messengers of God have ceased to be made manifest. Such is the measure of the understanding of these small-minded, contemptible people. These people have imagined that the flow of God's all-encompassing grace and plenteous mercies, the cessation of which no man can contemplate, has been halted. From every side they have risen and girded up the loins of tyranny, and exerted the utmost endeavour to quench with the bitter waters of their vain fancy the flame of God's burning bush, oblivious that the globe of power shall within its own mighty stronghold protect the lamp of God. Behold how the sovereignty of Muhammad, the messenger of God, is today apparent and manifest amongst the people. You are well aware of what befell his faith in the early days of his dispensation. What woeful sufferings did the hand of the infidel and erring, the divines of that age and their associates, inflict upon that spiritual essence, that most pure and holy being? How abundant the thorns and briars which they have strewn over his path! It is evident that that wretched generation, in their wicked and satanic fancy, regarded every injury to that immortal being as a means to the attainment of an abiding felicity, inasmuch as the recognized divines of that age, such as Abdullaye Abbey, Abu Amer the Hermit, Kab ibn Ashraf, and Nasr ibn Harith, all treated him as an impostor and pronounced him a lunatic and a calumniator. Such sore accusations they brought against him that in recounting them, God forbiddeth the ink to flow, our pen to move, or the page to bear them. These malicious imputations provoked the people to arise and torment him. And how fierce that torment, if the divines of the age be its chief instigators, if they denounce him to their followers, cast him out from their midst, and declare him a miscreant. Hath not the same befallen this servant, and been witnessed by all? For this reason did Mohammed cry out, "No prophet of God hath suffered such harm as I have suffered." And in the Quran are recorded all the calumnies and reproaches uttered against him, as well as all the afflictions which he suffered. Refer ye thereunto, that haply you may be informed of that which hath befallen his revelation. So grievous was his plight, that for a time all ceased to hold intercourse with him and his companions. Whoever associated with him fell a victim to the relentless cruelty of his enemies. Consider how great is the change today. Behold, how many are the sovereigns who bow the knee before his name, how numerous the nations and kingdoms who have sought the shelter of his shadow, who bear allegiance to his faith and pride themselves therein. From the pulpit top there ascendeth today the words of praise which in utter lowliness glorify his blessed name. And from the heights of minarets there resoundeth the call that summoneth the concourse of his people to adore him. Even those kings of the earth who have refused to embrace his faith and to put off the garment of unbelief, nonetheless confess and acknowledge the greatness and overpowering majesty of that day star of loving kindness. Such is his earthly sovereignty, the evidences of which thou dost on every side behold. This sovereignty must needs be revealed and established either in the lifetime of every manifestation of God or after his ascension unto his true habitation in the realms above. It is evident that the changes brought about in every dispensation constitute the dark clouds that intervene between the eye of man's understanding and the divine luminary which shineth forth from the dayspring of the divine essence. Consider how men for generations have been blindly imitating their fathers, and have been trained according to such ways and manners as have been laid down by the dictates of their faith. Were these men, therefore, to discover suddenly that a man who hath been living in their midst, who with respect to every human limitation hath been their equal, had risen to abolish every established principle imposed by their faith, principles by which for centuries they have been disciplined, and every opposer and denier of which they have come to regard as infidel, profligate, and wicked, they would of a certainty be veiled and hindered from acknowledging his truth. Such things are as clouds that veil the eyes of those whose inner being hath not tasted the salsabil of detachment, nor drunk from the kosar of the knowledge of God. Such men, when acquainted with those circumstances, become so veiled that without the least question they pronounce the manifestation of God as infidel and sentence him to death. You must have heard of such things taking place all down the ages, and are now observing them in these days. It behooveth us, therefore, to make the utmost endeavour that by God's invisible assistance these dark veils, these clouds of heaven-sent trials, may not hinder us from beholding the beauty of his shining countenance, and that we may recognise him only by his own self.